Hello and welcome to the next episode of the podcast on negotiation. And this episode is with a very special guest, with Vladimir Bushin, who's based in the US, who is the founding member of Cialdini's Institute. Who's also the founder of Negotiation Practice Community. That's the place where you guys need to go, or you can go if you would like to practice your negotiation skills. These guys meet regularly and negotiate based on super exciting cases, give each other feedback with the intention to genuinely develop their negotiation skills. And who is also the creator and someone who has developed seven levels of nurturing, which is a concept for building business relationships. Vladimir, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Remy. It's a pleasure to be on your podcast, on your episode, and talking to you. And I really appreciate that you found time and organized this so well.
Thank you so much, Vladimir. And here we go with the first question. Let's connect you as a person, 4 decades of business experience with building business relationships. How did you come up with this topic? How did you decide to focus on it? And what was the inspirational moment that has led you to this idea?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I think the first thing, of course, is introduction. So I would like to share a little bit about myself, so you understand where I'm coming from, and you understand what motivated me, and maybe you will find something that resonates with you. Maybe you'll find yourself in a similar situation. So I came from the IT world. I was a corporate employee for 20 plus years, and I'm also an immigrant. I immigrated from Russia into the United States in 2006, and I learned a lot during that transition. I learned a lot about the culture and communication in the United States, believe me, communication in Russia is quite a bit different in many aspects, and in terms of emotions as well, and in terms of, you know, habits of how people speak to each other, and the respect, the level of respect people pay to each other. And I don't want to be negative here. I will just give you a picture of what I'm seeing, and I will let you judge what it is. So what I would like to share with you is that when I have started with my corporate career, I was not good at communication at all. I've been struggling, and I pretty much am thinking like people probably tolerated me a lot, during my first years, my career. And I was ambitious, and I was focused on, you know, getting to know my hard skills. And this is probably what many of you do. You focus on your hard skills because this is what people pay you for. And at the same time, hard skills are important, but, you know, soft skills are what will let you grow. Somehow I projected my ambitious feelings and my aspirations to my management in Russia, and they promoted me to a manager, and I became a manager maybe because I knew the product very well, because I was a good software developer, and I started to work with teams. But I quickly realized that it's very tough. People are so argumentative, they oppose you. And when you are a manager, it's not like you have power to tell people what to do. You actually need to have a lot of conversations with people. You need to negotiate. So bottom line, long story short, I failed at my first management position. I was demoted. It was hardest experience in my life. It was my manager came from the United States, and he invited me to a lunch, and I thought, oh, lunch with my boss, that's so cool. And at lunch he said to me that I'm demoted. I couldn't eat anything, like I couldn't eat the meal at all. It was so hard. And I was demoted to a technical position essentially. But what's very interesting, it allowed me to stay in a company as a technical person. As a technical person, I was actually transferred to the United States to bridge communication between the US and the Russian team. And I realized that relationship skills are really important. And I started to learn about this. I started to learn about fundamentals. And I started to think about management career in the US and what it takes. And interestingly, I learned about rapport in the US. Before, I didn't even know what rapport is. Like, rapport was a word that doesn't have a translation for me. So I had to learn all of that from scratch. And over the years, I came to understanding. And later on in my career, I understood that I need to invest in that. I cannot really just wing it and hope that I pick up some advice from my peers or from boss or whatever. It needs to be systematic. And this is where my real, you know, or journey started. I certified as a Crucial Conversations trainer. And that was, you know, a gift of God, because there they give a good structure there and tell you like what Crucial Conversations is about, how to build a dialogue, why many of the dialogues fail. And then I found out about nurturing and empathetic conversations and how, what empathy actually is. Maybe people confuse empathy and sympathy, and being empathetic is not the same as being sympathetic. And I learned about that, and I learned about that I don't need to make the fool's choice, whether like tolerating silence or I need to just be aggressive and demand what I want. So I didn't want that anymore. And I understood that there's a middle here that I need to develop, and it takes skills and takes patience. And I build a community of practice, and this community of practice, people start to come and practice the empathetic conversation. We practice the tools from Never Split the Difference, and there is a concept of tactical empathy there. Really, really simple and very handy tools and techniques for anyone to talk to others, to be empathetic with others. And then I found it. Dr. Cialdini and Cialdini Institute was founded last year, and I joined it. I just jumped on it because Dr. Cialdini made a breakthrough in influence, and I read his book. I read his the books for influence and persuasion, and I got coaching from there, become a member, founding member of Cialdini Institute, and later built relationship with Jim Camp Jr. and joined the team of Camp Negotiation Systems. And I'm looking forward to my career of being a professional negotiator and negotiation coach, and help others to realize how to, you know, improve your bottom line, how to protect your margin, how to improve your bottom line, how to build a great culture, how to influence people at work, and build the culture of accountability, how to resolve conflicts, and also facilitate change, because you know, the most turbulent time happens during the time of change, and change is constant. So what we can say, it's very valuable to have a professional on your team to facilitate the change so it goes smoothly and you keep the talent. I hope I gave you a perspective here.
What an amazing journey, Vladimir. What an amazing journey. I was listening carefully to how you came, how you've become who you are today through struggles of the past. And looking back at your experience and also how you advise. Advise your clients. Let's talk first about principles and then about mistakes. Yeah? So when it comes to building relationships, do we need a solid fundament of core principle and beliefs that need to be shared between people? Or do you say it's possible to build a good, solid business relationship with anyone? Or with everyone, right? Regardless of whether we share those principles or not. What do you think, Rodrigo?
Yeah, it's a very good question. It's a thoughtful question, and it could be expanded to the whole book. So we kind of need to be short here. So first of all, we need to think like we need to look from the other side. So we need to think about what breaks business relationships, what prevents business relationships. And when we look at that side, we quickly see what's the problem with business relationships. Essentially, business relationship rests on trust. And if trust is violated, there will be no relationship. So people will not be confident to do anything with you. So essentially, relationships are everywhere. So everything starts from relationship, and specifically, it starts from respect and trust. And I strongly believe that trust is not possible without respect. There is no disrespectful trust. There is no concept of that. So if you want to start thinking about business relationship, think about how to build respect. But building respect is not enough. You need to build something else. I believe that you need to be beyond respect. You need to build something that Dr. Cialdini called liking. And I will tell you about this. I will give you an examples of that. But let me talk about respect a little bit here. So there was an experiment. I think it was an experiment in the beginning of the first part of the last century by three German professors, and they created the game. It was in 1982, and the professors were Girth, Guth, Schmidberger, and Schwartz, and they created the ultimatum game. So what ultimatum game is? First, there are two players, and the first player kind of makes the first move, and the second player makes the second move. The first player is given $10 and said, make a split. And according to the split, you will split this $10 between you and the second player. But the trick is there is a second step. The second step is the second player accepts the split. And if the second player says yes to the split, then they both get the money according to the split. If the second player says no, there will be no money. Nobody gets the money. So at first, the researchers thought that it will be logical if the first player would just say $10 for me and zero for the other, because for the second player, there is no difference. There is no loss. It will be same. The second player just needs to say yes. Surprisingly, it was quite the opposite. And the second player only accepted, in most of the cases, second player accepted near the equal split of the money. So what that means? That means someone would say to the second player, would you like $4? And the second player would say, nope, I don't want $4. I would like that person, second player, to understand that I am also important. So respect actually has roots in the Latin word recipro, and recipro means regard from Latin, and regard means respect is about whether the other people put you in regard. Do they think of your financial success? Do they think about your emotion? Do they think about what you will do next? Do they actually take you into account? And essentially, if the first player one disregards you and disregards how you feel about not getting money, and see that somebody else getting money for free, everything, and disregards your, you see that person disrespected you. That person disrespected your relationship. So you're together in the game, and disrespect actually costs money.
Right.
Disrespect costs money. So there's a very special word here called fairness. If fairness is not there, it's disrespectful, and disrespect costs money. So any unfair deal is costing real money.
Right.
So if respect is not there, forget about deals. Work on that first. So when you set the respectful relationship, then you need to talk about liking. And what liking is, it's one of the principles of Dr. Cialdini. And what liking says is, if people see that you like them, they assume that you respect them as well. Because would you disrespect someone who you like? Would you actually disregard them? Would you harm them? The people who you like, you probably won't. Most likely you won't. People who you like, you will actually foster them. You will support them. You will take them in regard. And liking means it's a security. It's like your insurance for respect. It's insurance that people take your point of view, your life, your emotions, your aspirations into account, and your system of values as well. They will negotiate with you. They will not really overpower you. They will not use leverage in you. So that is how important liking is. So, and the best way to project, to establish liking, projecting your liking, like tell people that you like them. I mean, just literally tell them, compliment them, tell them that you like them, tell them that you like their purposes, what they're doing, find something that you like about them. I mean, this is ethical. This is actually there. It's available for everyone. So don't hesitate. This is actually to your advantage to tell people, communicate that, and people will feel safe with you. So that's the most important. So if they feel safe, guess what? They're going to deal with you.
All right. Thank you so much for a quick summary of important principles and beliefs. So guys, remember, likability, respect. From respect, we gain trust. And from and there was and that leads to fairness. Yes, that's the sequence, I think, that Vladimir has just shared with us. How about mistakes, Vladimir? When did relationships break or never really take off?
Yeah. So mistakes, well, first of all, if you talk about mistakes, there are many mistakes you can do in relationships. And there are certain things that we do it habitually, and some of the things we just make our own decision about it. So, but I think habitual mistakes are the most detrimental. So when I was, when I was starting my career in Russia, one of my boss, the first boss of mine, we had a lot of conversations. It was a small company, a small team. And he said to me, Vladimir, do you realize that you have a habit of starting your every sentence with the word no? And I'm like, I had no idea. Can you imagine this? I start every time I open my mouth, I start from the word no. And that actually robs people, you know, their own way. I mean, this is not really a good start of the conversation. You can't really start. You cannot be having that habit and be successful.
Right.
It just draws back everything. You know, your relationship with your boss, relationship with your colleagues, relationship with your, peer students, your relationship with your teachers, relationship with your family members, relationship with your friends. I mean, you're just radiating conflict.
Negativity. Yeah.
Negativity. I hope that in your life there will be people who will kindly tell you, like my boss said to me, you know, Vlad, you have this. You know, you better change it. And since then, I started to kind of avoid that, and I started to see that other people have the same habit. And I thought, like, oh my God, this is like everywhere. This is just ubiquitous. And you know, robbing people in the wrong way, it's actually the most common thing that that happens. And how that happens easily is when you project your opinion, when you project your point of view or your logic, and you don't realize that it doesn't fit. It doesn't really fit the world inside other people, because all of us, don't make mistake about this, all of us have different world inside us, and that world consists of our values, our principles, ethics, aspirations, goals, hopes, dreams, identities, our meaning that we make. It's all unique, and we cannot take any information from outside without evaluating against that. We evaluate it constantly, and we subconsciously, we start to feel things. We feel it. We don't really rationalize that. We feel it, and then our emotions, we remember. We remember what we felt when we talked to another person. And the biggest mistake is like ignoring those emotions. If people start to talking about something and they start explaining like I'm talking, for some reason I have a hiccup on the video right now, but I hope it came back. So people just glossing over emotions and don't notice them, and they don't address them, and they keep talking about themselves. And by doing that, they essentially, they're missing the opportunity to connect, it's first, and second, they kind of come across as kind of having a wall. You can't really connect to the person who is always speaking about themselves, so himself, herself. So that becomes really hard. So ignore emotions, probably the biggest thing. So what to do to avoid that is actually you need to call emotions on the other side. And there is a really great tool for that. It's called reflective listening. And reflective listening, essentially, it's not about listening, it's about reflecting. So you need to learn how to reflect on what you see, right? So for example, I can say, oh, Remy, you're smiling right now. It sounds like something crossed your mind. So I reflect on what's going on, and I'm checking in with you. And that is very, very easy tool that anyone can learn. And maybe people think that they know already, but I rarely see it being used. Like in a real conversation, it's rarely used. Mm-hmm. Maybe only in very important conversation when people really prepare and they focus on it. So, but it's a habit.
So building relationships is hard. It's easy to make mistakes. So intuitively based on, as you correctly mentioned, based on the world that is in our head, we tackle certain things without thinking about them for too long, and that sometimes leads to building barriers. Yes, so stopping, inhibiting, or let's say prohibiting, maybe even the relationship building. And sometimes we destroy them by not sticking to the rules and principles that you've mentioned in your last answer. So Vladimir, what shall we do? I've heard that you've come up with a method called 7 levels of nurturing that helps us build business relationships or sustainable business relationships. So could you maybe briefly explain what 7 levels of nurturing are all about?
Yeah, absolutely. I would be happy to do that. And by the way, I wanted to make it clear that 7 levels of nurturing is about building rapport and trust. And it's not really a comprehensive system to sustain long-term business relationships. It's more about how do you actually find a connection with the other side? How do you actually make it stronger very quickly, and building that trust and credibility that you need to sustain business relationships? And actually, sustained business relationships is more complex than just a conversation. But 7 levels of nurturing essentially is a model of how to lead the conversation to the right place in order to connect. And I will tell you a bit about this, give you a snippet of what it is about. But before that, I wanted to tell you about the Cialdini, 7 principles of Cialdini. The first 3 principles of Cialdini is reciprocity, liking, and unity are the things that designed to build relationships. So we know that from ancient times, people actually, ancient tribes actually came to each other to make peace, and they brought some gifts to each other. It's a very old tradition, and there's a reason to that, because we are wired to make peace with gifts. We build rules, we build values, we build principles based on that from ancient times. That first of all, you can't really reject the gift, that you'll be rude. And second, if you get a gift, you have to reciprocate. You actually have to give something back. and that creates ties between people. So that's very important. We need to remember that it is available. And by the way, it's also ethical. It's actually something that could be valuable for the other side. It's start of relationships, supportive for the other side. You make it good for them. And don't consider it a gimmick or a trick. It's actually when you start helping each other. And like what relationship is about? It's about helping each other, right? So from this perspective, it's absolutely ethical to use this principle of reciprocity. The second one is liking. We already talked a little bit about that. So find similarities between you and the other side. Like put some time to get to know each other, and don't rush into the business right away. Don't pitch without asking if they need it. So, and then the third one is unity, and unity is one of the most influential principles, because unity is about finding that you are the same. For example, Remy, you and I are negotiators. That's our point of unity. And if I lived in Germany, that would be localism. Localism is really important. For example, I could say like we are both Europeans. That would be a point of unity, right? Yes, right. I'm an immigrant, but I grew up in Russia. So we are Europeans in St. Petersburg. Well, Russia is big, but in St. Petersburg, right? So that will be point of localism. If we would be brothers, that will be a huge point of unity. So people, it's known that people, in spite of all the differences in views, people support family by all means. So people never give up on family. It's a huge point of unity. So always use that. Warren Buffett actually used that principle, and he addresses his audience, you know, all the investors come together, and he would say, I would give you, I will tell you about Berkshire Hathaway, what I tell to my family. So he compared the audience who came with his family, and this is very connecting. It's very connecting point for all the audience. Now, back to seven levels of nurturing. Seven levels of nurturing is a mental model, kind of like of our mindset. So what that means is you can go through that mental model deeper, to find a deeper connection. So now the question is, what's important to us? So on the top level, it's called circumstantial level. Circumstantial level is about what's going on, you know, what's the weather, what's the news and stuff. And the second level is logical, is our logical opinion of how we actually process it and what we logically conclude. It's very important to be valuable, logical to each other, because when we're valuable to each other, logically, we feel to be a part of a society. We feel equal, and we also need to validate our own logic against the others to find that we are actually on point, that we are mentally capable. This is a very important point. So logical level. Next is emotional. Emotional is deeper level. When we connect on emotions and we find similar emotions and we address emotions and we recognize emotions, very connecting. The next is aspirational. Aspirational is about dreams and hopes. If you want to connect with somebody deeper, talk about their dreams and hopes and desires, and you will feel it. You will feel that people are really drawn to you and they want to talk to you more. And the next level under dreams and hopes is the level of fundamental truth. I call it fundamental truth. It's what's true for you. All your principles, all your values, the ethics, like the system that you operate on. And any information that you hear, you compare with this principle, with this level, and you kind of try to figure out if it's actually fitting there or not. And if it doesn't fit, you may just ignore it. It's like, oh, there's some erroneous data. It doesn't fit my system. That's why people, you know, could be some argumentative with each other, because some people see a value and some people don't. So, and under this is the level of identity. It's where all the transformation happens. Underneath is a level of purpose, a meaning. And the level of meaning is what meaning you make out of life. Because we actually, it's our perception. We actually 100% consistent with our perception of what, how we perceive life. So we are meaning-making machines, if you would. You make meaning of everything. So, and when you know the system, you can actually know where you are in the conversation. You can navigate through your conversation and invite the other side to the deeper level. And when you have this discussion on a deeper level of the fundamental truth, on the level of identity and purposes and the level of meaning, and you talk about how they come to a realization of who they are, so of their identity, you will connect really, really strongly. Some people even, you know, shed a tear over the level of meaning, because it could be a, you know, some experience in their life that they don't share very, very often. Yeah, but this will be connecting. I experienced that in Landmark, and I had some partners, and when we start sharing that, it's so bonding, you can't believe it. This is something. Yeah, I can tell you. That's, you feel like brothers and sisters. Yeah,
that's very intriguing. Thank you so much for this great overview of seven levels of, what you said, said nurturing, right? Yep. Where does nurturing come into play in this context, right? I get the levels, I get the depth of the relationship or conversation, and then relationship. Who do we nurture? What do we nurture as we're going through those levels?
Yeah, I had to unpack this term. This actually term comes from a great book. I actually have it on my shelf here. It's called Start to Know. And actually, I read it in Russian in 2005 before I came to the United States. But this is actually a translated book, and Start to Know is a book by Jim Camp. I actually had a pleasure meeting Jim Camp Jr. His son, and actually he signed the book for me, so it's very, very special to me. So the term nurturing was coined by Jim Camp Sr., and he defined it as to feed emotionally and foster the mind with good understanding and appreciative thoughts. And what that means is nurture is a supportive comment that assures full understanding of the meaning and emotions of the other side, and create those appreciative thoughts. It can take a form of reflective listening. It could take a form of labeling values and purposes, like on seven levels of nurturing. It could take a form of recognition, acknowledgement, validation, and appreciation. Or it could be a special thing. I call it painting their picture. So that means telling their stories with better colors. So adding bright colors to their stories. If somebody's telling you a story, you can pitch in and say, like, yeah, exactly. And this was even this and this and this, and you give details to that, and they really enthusiastically agreeing with you. So imagine if you meet your buddy from college in a bar after 20 years separation, and you start talking stories about university, and you start to say, like, oh, you remember this happened, like, oh yeah, we had this and this event, and you start to compliment each other's story. That is actually called nurturing. It's painting their picture. So that's very important. This very bonding, because at this point you start to understand how they feel, what's important for them, and what was in their eyes, like what picture was there. And nurturing has an incredible effect on people, because in many cases we do the opposite. We actually argue. We actually, you know, somebody saying like, oh, you know, this is a very interesting thing I learned yesterday. And and somebody will say like, well, but this is not really fitting here. And people like, okay, well, I'm sharing something really important to me. I was excited. Now you're killing my excitement. So the question is, why do we argue with others? Like, why do we actually point out where it doesn't work? We do that because it doesn't fit our system. And like, oh, I struggle to fit it in my system. Please help me fit it in my system. So it's like becomes a conversation about me, versus instead of doing that, find out how it fits their system and have a conversation about them. I mean, this will be much more productive, and you will feed this information in your system later. You need to process that. You know, just take your time. Don't be so quick telling the other side that, yeah, it doesn't fit me, you know.
So. Thank you for sharing this. This is I've I've been listening to it with open eyes and almost mouth. I struggled to keep my mouth closed. So this is super interesting. I mean, so when we take, for example, the seven levels of nurturing, the method, right? The method of guiding or developing a conversation that leads to a deeper bond, right, with our conversation partner or business partner, right? The first question that pops up in my mind is it universal? In other words, more extreme version of that question would be, can we build a business relationship with this method with a devil? Devil mm-hmm. as a symbol of a being or a person with completely opposing values. Right? Is it possible, Vladimir? Is it possible to apply seven levels of nurturing and still build successful relationships, even if there are fundamental radical differences on many of the levels?
Yeah. So it's very interesting question. I never thought of this, and you know, now I'm thinking like, oh, devil's question. Interesting devil question. I need to think about how to address that. So first of all, you need to actually figure out how devil becomes a devil, because if you don't understand where devil coming from, you'll never understand the devil. Like, how can you will be opposing their values and saying your values are wrong. So what's the point in that if you don't understand their values? Of course, it could be impossible to actually make a deal with the devil, because it will be risky. It will be just hard to find connection points. So if you're talking about different value set, it means that completely different value set. That means there is no rapport there on a very deep level. And by the way, if the devil calls himself a devil, there is no identity connection. I mean, I'm not a devil and you are a devil. We are different. That the only level where we can connect is the last level of meaning. Like, we need to find out what happened to you and what meaning do you apply to that, and start there. And there is no other way, because all the levels above, they're affected by the deeper levels.
Right.
So you kind of need to hear the story. So you kind of need to sit with the devil and say, like, could you tell me a story? Like, how you arrived to those values? Like, what your values are, and how you came up with that, and how you became a devil? And it could be a learned journey, because, you know, transformational change, like, you gotta be really patient to understand, like, what is really causing. Maybe they went through a really traumatic life and 1,000 years, and that shaped their identity, and that is possible. Undoing that is a hard work, and maybe you shouldn't take on that. So pick your battles from that perspective. So from this perspective, yeah, you can actually explore using seven levels of nutrition. Maybe you can connect on the deepest level on something. Maybe you can find even values that are similar. Maybe devil is, we all have many identities, by the way. It's not the only identity that we have. Like, your name is your identity, your role is your identity, your job is your identity. Like, you can say, I'm a son, I'm a father, I am a corporate employee, I'm a coach, I'm Vladimir. Like, all of these are identities. So if I call myself a devil, but at the same time I call myself a corporate worker, this is where we can connect, right? So find points of connections and use nurturing in terms of empathetic. So you use empathetic conversation to find their values, connect where we can, where you can connect, and just grow from there. So what else? I don't know what what else I can.
Oh, that sounds great. That sounds great. And typically, you know, try to understand why devil is a devil, right? In the first place, supposedly all of them used to be angels at some point, right?
Maybe I can add here, also find out who else is a devil. So, because devil is not only a devil, but also could be of different identity and purpose. Yeah,
with a legion of devils. All right, Vladimir. So let's move on to the next step. So now we've learned about the concept of seven levels of nurturing, and we know what those levels are. We know why there are different levels, and we know what nurturing is all about. Mm-hmm. So if someone is convinced about this mental model, yes, how can we turn the understanding of the concept into practice? Yes, what advice would you give to our listeners and viewers who would be interested to become better conversationalists or build better relationships with seven levels of nurturing?
Well, negotiation and influence are human performance skills. So you need to get habits of doing things. And specifically, if you're talking about negotiation and you're talking about building relationship, you should have good habits of speaking. You should have conversational patterns that are proven. And all of this takes practice. So I would recommend you need to practice your conversational partners, and you practice your strategies, your strategic thinking. And you need to do it over and over. As if you would practice Taekwondo. And I have an analogy with Taekwondo here in many ways, because in Taekwondo, there are three different ways of learning. One is the real street fight. Like you go and you have to apply your skills to survive, right? That's one type of thing. Negotiation is the same thing, and building relationship. You go there and you apply these things to build the real relationships, right? So or fix the bad relationships, right? So the second is the dojo. You come to the dojo, you train your moves, and some instructor is looking at you and telling you like whether you do it right or not. And also there's another one, it's called competition. You go to competition, and Remy, this is what you are actually doing. You organize a competition, and people come into there to see what they're worth, because they want to understand, get feedback, and see like in the real challenge in the environment to see how good they are and what kind of moves the other people do, right? So they actually need to try it, and they try it in a low stake environment where they will not lose thousands and thousands of dollars or English pounds or euros, whatever. So they actually will be safe to only spend 2,000 euro, and then that will be the biggest investment, and there will be no more, to pay. So from this perspective, competition. But the thing is, you really cannot learn Kung Fu or Taekwondo by watching Kung Fu movies. It's impossible. I mean, you can enjoy it, you can see how people do moves, but you cannot become a Kung Fu master by watching Kung Fu movies. So forget YouTube. I mean, YouTube is great, but you gotta understand that it takes practice and repetitions and feedback to get better at that. Yeah, that's my belief. So I would recommend, find partners for practice, and find some people who would coach you and who would tell you. With your partner, if you practice with your partner, you probably could feel like what is good, what is not, but it may take you years to get better at this. With a coach, you could get better in a matter of few weeks, and you will just say like, wow, I just did this amazing deal, $36 on a dollar invested. Wow, I actually changed unchangeable flight tickets. I get refund on the non-refundable things. I actually negotiated a repair on the warranty that expired 3 years ago. So people start to do things like that. And about relationships, so people say like, I have a challenging client, and this client gives me pain every session. but I had a conversation with this client, and now it's like so great, and we found, you know, really good fit, and this client actually completed the course, and everything is great because we actually had that kind of that nurturing conversation, and we, you know, we connected and we figured out how to proceed, negotiated that. You know, that is what it means. That is what it means for people.
All right, amazing. Yes. So first of all, getting knowledge, attaining knowledge. Second, repetition. And when you're ready, compete, right? These three things. So, but Vladimir, if someone from our listeners and or viewers would like to find out more about seven ways of nurturing, about how to build better relationships, can you point us to books, resources, courses, workshops that we could use on our way to conversational or relationship building mastery?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, I would highly recommend to read the book Influence, and the book Influence here, I will show you. This is my background. So by Robert Cialdini, it's a brilliant book. It's 40 years old. Sold millions and millions of times, a bestseller. Warren Buffett, actually over 5 million copies sold. Another cherished gift for me is a signature by Dr. Cialdini here. I met him in person. I was so lucky to meet him in person. A very, very kind person, very clever, very sharp. And he's leading Cialdini Institute. And supporting all the coaches there. So first of all, read the book, get a training from Cialdini Institute, the practitioner trainer. It's worth every dollar, every penny to get that training.
How much does it cost?
I think it costs $1,500, and okay. It has over 100 videos and different exercises in order to understand those principles. And also you can work through your personal challenge. If you want, you can come to me and I get my 8-week group coaching on this book, Cialdini Principles. And that will include those videos at that course from Cialdini Institute. So I can do that because I'm a certified coach and the founding members. Second, read this book, The Start With No by Jim Kemp Senior. And this is brilliant book, very contrarian, that actually teach you how to avoid compromises. And we compromise all the time, whether we avoid negotiation, we compromise, or we just come to negotiation and say, well, let's split it in the middle, and you will get this part, and I will get this part, and we just don't negotiate. And people avoid negotiation because they're so scared to be emotional about this, and they think like the negotiation is about breaking the relationship and do everything, do everything you can on the expense of the relationship. But this is absolutely wrong. So read this book. This is brilliant. It gives you a lot of great ideas how to actually build relationship and negotiate at the same time, because this is the key. This is the key. Read Crucial Conversation. Crucial Conversation, brilliant book. Read Never Split the Difference book by Chris Voss. He actually explains their tools, like very, very simple tools, like labels and mirrors and other tools. The tools from Start With No by Jim Kemp also has a very good thorough explanation of nurturing and the Colombo effect. You can come to me and you can get the 8-week group coaching for the 7 levels of nurturing. So that starts in July. By the way, you can jump on that. And also that includes reflective listening. By the way, tonight I will hold a reflective listening masterclass. So 1 hour, and I will give you a demo of how reflective listening works and what the principles are. There are 5 principles and 8 mistakes that people commonly typically do in reflective listening. So I will talk about that. And what else here? Let's stop here. Yeah, let's stop
here. And of course, the practice community, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, come to the negotiation practice community. Thanks so much for reminding that, Remy. Appreciate that. So come
absolutely.
To practice in the negotiation practice community.
course. Yes, guys. So remember, read books, gain knowledge, but it doesn't stop there, right? I mean, this is just knowledge, and behavior is about action. So to change, yeah, to turn knowledge into action, we need to establish a habit, and habit consists of repetitions. And repetitions, well, we can do it in real business life, or we can do it in protected environment, which I strongly recommend. Before we play at a high stake or for high stakes, it's always good to try to test things out and see how they work out in a protected environment. All right, yeah. Good.
Maybe one thing. Don't forget to compete, because it's an important thing. And unfortunately, we don't put a lot of emphasis in negotiating practice community on competition or organizing like a large competition. But I think it's important. It's a necessary step in your growth and your self-evaluation. So imagine how popular Taekwondo could be without belts. If everybody always wear white belt and never had any color belt, any black belts, any degrees, everybody would be equal. It would be a different system, but get your belt and be proud of that. You know, go to competition, participate, and learn from others what others do. Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much, Vladimir. Flows to your side. Right, exactly, guys. Remember that we wouldn't have Michael Jordan if there wasn't an NBA. We wouldn't have Usain Bolt if there were no Olympic Games, right? So I heard that there is a good negotiation competition called the Negotiation Challenge. And if you guys would like to find out more about it, just Google it. Go for thenegotiationchallenge.org, and you'll find out a whole lot more about what it is and what it means and how it can help you become a better negotiator. My last two questions, Vladimir. Number one, your advice. Yes, if you were to, I know we talked about a lot of things, and we could have probably extend the length of this podcast indefinitely, right? So by choosing one of the things that we briefly mentioned during the last hour. But if you were to squeeze and extract everything that you know about negotiation, building better relationships, or improving existing relationships, what would you say? What would be your advice?
Well, yeah. I'm thinking this is kind of like what is number one? Yeah, good question. Makes me think. I would say watch for the emotions, because emotions actually, first of all, emotions reflect in values. So we don't feel emotions just because. Emotions are kind of like manifestations of what's going on within us. So if you see emotional people, always be curious about why they're emotional, and don't fall into a bias like, oh, they're bad people. Like, no, they're not bad people. We cannot really act in spite of our values. Like, we can't step over our own system that we built. So our values, our principles, and our ethics and our philosophy is fundamental thing within us that we can't really live without. We cannot make decisions without them. And everything that happens to us reflects in emotions in comparison to that level. So, you know, think about emotions more. Don't ignore it. In the corporate world, it's so common that, you know, the corporate leaders just gloss over emotions. And maybe some people believe like emotions do not fit the corporate environment. But no, actually, emotions are decision-making drivers. The decision drivers. We actually, first explored in the first part of the last century, that people, some people could not make decisions when they had some problem with the brain, and, you know, parts of the brain were not functioning well, they cannot make decisions. And also, recently, Daniel Kahneman, a professor who got Nobel Prize, he stated that 96% of decisions are made emotionally. And some of procurement teams, they built the whole system of logical steps in order to mitigate the emotion. So it will not be emotional, it will be more logical, right? So, people make efforts to actually deal with emotions. So don't ignore them. I mean, this is so important to understand them, read them, and actually influence emotions, essentially. So when you influence decisions, you pretty much influence emotions, because there is a, you know, one bigger decision-making emotion. I will leave it as a mystery for you. So think about what is the decision-making emotion. Think on your own and give an answer for yourself. If you're curious, reach out back to me and I will give you an answer. What does it mean? And what is a decision-making emotion that should be present?
So thank you for your advice, Vladimir. So emotions, pay attention, try to understand them and use emotions as we negotiate, to quote a very famous book by Dan Shapiro and Roger Fisher, right? Which came after getting to yes. So last question, Vladimir, is always the same. And that's a question about greatness. Yes, greatness in negotiation. So if you were to name a person that has truly inspired you as a negotiator, that person who you would consider, maybe despite the fact that they didn't inspire you, a great negotiator, who would it be?
Well, I'm afraid I will disappoint you and I will not be very original. I will just repeat, this is Jim Camp, who wrote this very contrarian book, Start With No. And this is a mind-blowing book. This concept essentially shaped the negotiation landscape and the modern negotiation by saying, like, what you don't need for negotiation. For example, you don't need a yes, you actually need a no. And this is so the opposite of what other people think, and you think, like, well, why do I need no? Why do I even worry about this? I mean, no is a scary word, but this is like people fear no because it's scary to hear no, because it feels like rejection, and you start to feel like you are not a good person and you're rejected and you are not valued. Like you start to feel a lot of emotions when you hear no, and also it's hard to say no to others. And when you say no, you feel like you're offending someone and you want to be nice. And again, you feel like you're a bad person, you're a devil. But the thing is, you need to learn how to hear no, because everything that you get from in life, so everything is related to asking people. And if you don't ask, you don't get it. Like, I think there's a famous quote, you don't get what you deserve, you get what you negotiate. And that's very true. So don't be afraid to hear no. Yes lives in the reality of no. And some of the people even collected no's. And my coach is saying, when I was young, we would put rejection on my wall in college, you know, how many times you were rejected. And this is like amazing. This is amazing. I was thinking, like, this is so clever to do that. I'm collecting the no's, I don't collect yeses. So that's Jim Camp and Camp Negotiation System. And this is a really brilliant book. And another one, of course, Dr. Cialdini. Dr. Cialdini is still alive. Take advantage of it. Reach out to Dr. Cialdini. Go to his conference. Ask him a question. So by the way, I think Dr. Cialdini tells a story that he met somebody from Poland and that some teacher and university or college, and they say, like, you know, my students thought, because your book is so great, they thought you're dead. You're like, no, I'm not dead, but I'm popular, 5 million copies sold. So take advantage of that, learn about this book, send a message. Dr. Cialdini is in the in LinkedIn. You can reach out to him, send him a message, and reach out to me. And I'm also connected to Dr. Cialdini. Maybe I ask your question one of the coaching calls that we have with Dr. Cialdini, and then we'll get back to you and give you the answer. So that's also a possibility. Come to me, and we'll discuss that.
So thank you so much. Yes. So we have Jim Camp, Dr. Cialdini. Thank you so much, Vladimir, for sharing your insights. Now we know much more. Thank you for inspiring us to look deeper into the ways we build relationships and sustain them and structure our conversations and influence others. It's been a great pleasure meeting you, Vladimir. All the best. And until the next time on the podcast on negotiation. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Remy. It's a pleasure to be here and hope to see you at the competition.
All right. Thank you so much, Vladimir. Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.